Thank you, Steve. That was the fastest theme song in the history of television. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. The reason for that very fast theme song is, number one, we have a short show today. We don't have time to play a long theme song.
No time to mess around.
And number two, on TV, Wendy, you don't have time to play a theme song anymore.
You know what? That's absolutely true. You want to get right to the show.
Yep.
And one of my favorite shows, and yours as well, The Middle.
Coming to an end on Tuesday night, my friend Neil Flynn has played Mike Hack for 9 seasons on The Middle. That reign of terror comes to an end on Tuesday. How are you, Neil?
I'm great. How you doing, Bill and Wendy?
Fine. Wendy's nervous.
I just love you. I just love you. When The Middle started and Modern Family started, we watched them both, and our family gravitated right to The Middle. It is the best show on television.
Well, what a nice thing to hear. I've talked to Bill before. I don't think I've talked to you, though.
No, it's an honor. I'm nervous, I got to tell you. I love your character. It's just, you're the best dad on television ever.
That's exciting. Maybe I'll go down in history with Brian Keith.
Yes, with Uncle Bill from
Uncle
Family
Beale.
Affair. Yeah. But, Neil, honestly,
yeah,
I would...
Oh, you're right. He wasn't the dad. I forgot he wasn't their dad.
If you're looking at realistic...
I'm just trying to pull an obscure 70s.
That was beautiful. We loved it.
Thank you.
And we will expect a Mr. French reference from you at some point during the interview. So have that at ready.
Very nice.
Honestly, though, if you're looking for realistic dads, dads that are just fed up, you know, they've lived it all, they've seen it all, your character, Mike Hack, over the last 9 seasons has embodied that beautifully.
Thank you. I think, yeah, I try to be a realistic dad. Early on when we were doing, like the second episode or something, the director is saying, and they're fighting and you're getting all worked up and angry. And I said, I don't say anything for 2 pages. How worked up do you want me to? And I said, no, it's not going to work. If they're going to fight that much, I have to be sort of over it.
But you were the the laissez-faire dad, I'm here, I'm providing for my family. But in this last season, the last couple, but especially these last few episodes, you have just blossomed into this father that I'm not used to. It's like, wait a minute, you're actually going to sit and listen to Sue talk? Axel, you're there for him, you're his buddy now. He's really blossomed, your character, Mike Hack, has really blossomed.
I guess so. I kind of based that on when I got older, like college age and after, my dad changed as his kids. I was one of 6 of his kids, but as we all got older, he mellowed, and became more, he was less authoritarian and more
of a peer, kind of.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say peer. But so you made a big mistake there.
Yeah, I guess I did.
Brian Keith wouldn't have made that mistake.
No, but nope. Sissy would have.
Sissy would have. Kathy Garver would have.
Oh God.
Oh, nice.
Thank
nice.
You. Thanks, Nick.
Back.
I studied.
But just someone that, sometimes you just wanted to have a conversation, just with now that he considered you an adult. And so it's hard to think of, Axel and Sue as adults, but technically, they are. Axel is done with the character Axel, for those not familiar with the show. He's finished college, and he's heading out into the world. So, yeah, I think it's realistic that the relationships change a little bit.
What are you going to miss most about doing The Middle? 9 seasons is a long time. You're used to that with Scrubs. You did about 9 seasons of Scrubs. But what are you going to miss the most, Neil?
I suppose the people. It was a really nice working environment, and everyone got along very well. Thank goodness. It would have been, for the amount of time we spent together, it would have been very difficult to have any sort of a strained environment. And thank goodness we didn't. And I'm going to see Patty Heaton again. She just informed me yesterday that she's having people over to watch the finale on Tuesday. So
that'll be emotional, won't it? Do you think you'll tear up a little bit?
It's possible, and I'm a little bit irritated that Patty wants me there in front of her and other people. They're absolutely going to cry. I guarantee you they're all going to cry at their own product,
Sure.
The producers and directors, they'll be there. And you know, it's possible. I'm not incapable of shedding a tear.
Yeah.
But I think people that watch the show that have followed it all along will be satisfied with the finale.
I cry every episode. I really do. every episode. I have two teenage boys, and my oldest, Michael, just informed me, I can't believe the middle's ending. We watched last night's episode, and he's like, I've been watching this since I've been in sixth grade, and because of Axel's character, my son Michael walks around in his underpants only all the time with a guitar. That's the only difference.
Well, yeah, I know. It's amazing for someone, like your sons who watched it as kids. It's been on for a big chunk of their life.
Yeah, it definitely has.
Half of it, I suppose.
And, you know, a lot of times when you have kids on a television show, as they mature, you don't like the kids anymore. These kids are fantastic.
All three of them, yeah.
Well, they're good actors, and that was a stroke of luck, because you really don't know what you're getting when you cast children on a TV show. Especially if they're going to stick around for 9 years. And we got very lucky as far as that goes. The kids could each handle a plot line of their own, and they got a lot of them over time.
Yeah.
And I think especially, and early on, Sue blossomed into a very good character.
Oh, my God, she's so funny.
Yeah. Everybody on the show, let's take a quick break. Neil Flynn is joining us. He's played Mike Hack on The Middle for the past 9 seasons. You're going to miss the show, but you're not going to miss him. We have some very good news coming up for you, so stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, so for the past 9 seasons, Neil Flynn, Waukegan's own Neil Flynn, has played Mike Hack on The Middle. That show comes to a close this upcoming Tuesday night. But Neil, you were only out of work for about, what, 10 minutes, 12 minutes?
Yeah, it came pretty quick. I did. I read for another show, and got the job. And so we finished on Friday. We wrapped The Middle on Friday. Had a party on Saturday, and I was at work Monday morning on this new show.
No vacation time or anything, Neil?
No. Well, that comes now. We won't start shooting the episodes until probably August or so. So I got a little time now, but. Yeah, that was a quick overlap.
Very fast. What's the new show?
It's called Abby's, and it's going to be on NBC. And it is about a woman named Abby who has a bar in her backyard.
She's my idol.
Yeah, it's kind of a dream.
Of everyone.
I would enjoy that. That's so I play a denizen of the bar. It's illegal, by the way, to have a bar in your backyard.
It is, isn't it?
And it turns out. So that's the conflict in the pilot episode, and I imagine it will get resolved, or else the show will completely change after the pilot episode.
Neil, I think it's better to make that the pilot, not just the pilot, but every episode. That's the conflict every week.
Someone comes in and says, you know, this is illegal.
Right. Oh, end of episode.
And comedy ensues.
Yeah, it always does. It always does. All right. Yes. So I have to ask you this, because in addition to the big five on The Middle, your guest stars were amazing. And I just want you, if you wouldn't mind, commenting on a couple of them. Number one, the great Jerry Van Dyke, who played your father-in-law. What was that like to work with him?
That was fantastic. I knew who Jerry was since I was, 7 or 8 years old from watching the Dick Van Dyke Show. And so I was thrilled to meet him. And he was constantly surprised if I understood something from old television or something he had done. He'd say, how do you know that? I'd always say, I've known who you are forever. You know, I could recite his dialogue back to him. And his brother... Turns out Dick Van Dyke is his brother.
Oh, what?
Did not know that.
How about that? Fun fact.
They were related. Also, Wally Cox was their brother.
Yeah, I knew that. I did know that.
Yeah. He changed his name. But it was it was great. I always loved having him there. And he passed away recently.
Yep.
And I was at his memorial. Oh. And Dick was there. And I couldn't... You know, it's the sort of thing that if you told me this as a kid, that you would work with see that guy on TV? You're going to work with him on TV. I would have not believed you. But the thrill of that is, and I'll make this short because I know you have other guest stars you want to ask me about.
All right.
Is that I did the Dick Van Dyke appeared on Scrubs also.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
So wow.
Two TV shows and Dick Van Dyke.
That's outstanding. That's outstanding.
Where did you work with Wally Cox? Was it Underdog?
Yes, I played Simon Bar-Sinister.
You were so good as Simon Bar-Sinister. Now, the other one I have to ask you about is on your on the show, your brother was played by Norm MacDonald, who I think is the funniest stand-up working today. What was that like having Norm MacDonald as a brother?
Again, always loved him. Always loved if I saw that Norm was going to be there.
Yeah.
And let me tell you a quick story. Norm is extremely funny and very smart, but there are times where you're not sure what's going on in his brain. There was an episode where we were at Brick's Spelling Bee, and I said, I'm going to go get us a couple. Oh, no, he said, I'm going to go get us a couple beers. And I said, they don't sell beer at Spelling Bees, Rusty. And then the next time he said the line, he said, I'm going to go get us a couple of beer. I said, did you say a couple of beer? He said, well, you said beer. I know, they don't sell beer. And it was this odd conversation. I couldn't tell if he was kidding or not. I honestly don't think he was kidding. At one point he said, maybe it's because I'm from Canada.
Right.
What? That makes sense.
Pull the Canada card.
Sure. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, we're, you know, we're no plurals in Canada, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
know what he was talking about, but it makes him that much more fun to be around.
Yeah.
You're never sure what the heck he's thinking.
Yep.
But, yeah, always loved having Norm there.
Just, I can't tell you, this is such a portrayal of a realistic family. I mean, you and Frankie, you love each other, but you're not over the top affectionate. Your kids fight, everybody teases each other. But so many of the episodes you come together, I remember the Thanksgiving one where you're stuck in a traffic jam and then you're all getting together and happiness happens. It's just so realistic. You know, I'm so sick of the families being so perfect with one another. Kind of dysfunctional, but yet loving. I really appreciate that.
Well, that credit goes to the writers. They did a good job with that. A couple of women from the Midwest created the show. I'll say the names, Eileen Heisler and Deanne Helene. They, I believe they met at Indiana University and have been writing partners ever since. So, yeah, it's really, really difficult to write whatever we did, 215 episodes or something.
Wow.
And because there's more than one plot line in each episode, and to be able to maintain any sort of consistency and quality over that long a time is a real feat, and they pulled it off.
Why did Brick give up the whispering? Whispering.
Well, that came back every once in a while.
You know, yes. Very infrequently, though.
About it completely, but I think it was running the risk of being enough is enough. I don't know. As you know, Bill knows. I've told him forever, Bill, enough is enough.
Right. Stop with the whispering.
Driving some joke into the ground.
You know? I got to tell you, watching Brick's girlfriend who towers over him.
And loves shrimp. You got to sing for the shrimp.
Me. It's like my teenage boys do not have girlfriends, and I'm like, you guys, Brick has a girlfriend. Would you do something? Probably not a good thing to say.
You know what I never thought of until just now? Not that I would ever call Atticus a shrimp.
Yeah.
But that's sort of a subtle...
Right.
Right.
It, yeah, an inside nod. Yeah. It is, isn't it?
I never thought of that until now. She likes shrimp.
Yeah.
That's why she likes Brick.
That's it. We've solved another mystery. Oh, boy. Neil, the show has been fantastic for 9 seasons, and I'm so thrilled that you're not looking for work. You got another job right away. The new show starts in the fall, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, I think we might be mid-season, which I always thought was sort of a bad thing, but I'm told it's not.
Yeah.
It's actually advantageous somehow to come in mid-season. So I think even though we're going to start shooting them in August, I think my guess is they'll start airing in January or
Excellent.
So.
Excellent. Good, good, good. And the name of the show again is?
Abby's.
Abby's. All right, on NBC.
The girl's name Abby with an S on it.
Okay.
That. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's. I trust that it'll be a good show, and I hope people watch.
I'm so glad.
And by the way, thanks to everybody who watched the middle. It was the viewers kept us on the air, and we really enjoyed it.
Such a great show, and thankfully you have been picked up, and you'll be on another show because Neil, I don't know what I do not being able to see you every week.
Well, I'll for that reason alone, I will continue to work on television.
That keeps you in the game.
I know I'm gushing. I'm sorry. I'm just a big fan of you and the show. Great job.
Neil, when you're in town, stop by. We would love to have you in studio next time you're in town.
I would be glad to do that if it's 100% convenient for me.
All right. That sounds that's fair.
Right. Like today, we were told if our producer Jasmine could wake you up, you'd do the interview. So thanks for waking up. We appreciate that.
Well, yeah, it's just that I just flew in from New York last night, so I was not certain I was going to be up and at them, but I am, and I will. Now, Bill, last time I was there, you wanted me to come in at night. Is your show always in the morning now?
It's a midday show. I used to be on at night, but then we switched it to middays, actually to make it easier for you.
Excellent. I appreciate that. the 10 to 12, I can definitely do. Next time I'm in town, I'll come by.
All right, we can't wait. Thanks, Neil.
Good luck.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Take care. The elusive Neil Flynn, everybody, star of The Middle formerly. Well, I guess for one more week. You can see him one more week on The Middle on ABC and then a new show starting in the fall. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. All right. It's getting to be that time of year where school is coming to a close. Do we get summers off?
Yeah, we're off for the entire summer.
I can't wait. Our friend, our show psychologist, Dr. John Duffy, is with us, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert. You can find him on his podcast called Better with his wife, Julie Duffy. Dr. John Duffy, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks always for having me, guys. Good to be here.
All right, it's that time of year. School is coming to a close. It can't come soon enough. I have a couple of kids where they're checking out instead of working hard to kick ass on their finals.
And the contrast to that is parents are not checking out. They're checking in. They want to make sure we're getting all those final reports in. We're preparing for finals. We're getting ready for summer. We're doing something other than looking at screens. So there's this contrast happening in homes that is driving anxiety way high, and myself and my colleagues couldn't be busier these days.
It's the parents' expectations. We want our kids to do the best that they can, so we're pushing them, but how can you push someone who doesn't want to be pushed?
Well, it's the trickiest thing, right? Because as parents, we get anxious, and we focus on behavior, which is completely understandable, right? You are not doing your work, and your grades are not very good as a result. If we can focus, if we could take a breath as parents, recognize we're trying to control our own anxiety, not that of our kids, and we could sit down with our kids and kind of in a collaborative, calm way, talk about, okay, so I noticed you're not doing your math work. Give me a little insight as to why that is. Uh-huh. Address it in a calm way, and then you might get some answers that surprise you. But if you're just trying to buckle down and control behavior, I think we're all realizing as time goes on, kids do not respond to this in a positive way at all.
They go the other way.
They go the other way. Exactly, Wendy. It's like a magnet facing the wrong way.
Maybe I'm making this too simple, but can't you just sit down with your child and say, you got 3 more weeks or 4 more weeks. You can get through this. The big part of the year is long gone. It's just a little bit more. You can get through 3 or 4 more weeks.
Every once in a while, a kid will respond to that.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, they'll approach those last 3 weeks the same way they approach the 15 weeks preceding them.
Yeah.
And maybe even more so. Maybe there's even more resistance because they feel the anxiety coming from mom and dad, the anxiety coming from the school.
Yeah.
So it's amplified in these last 3 weeks. So actually, it actually gets a little worse now.
Does it?
Yeah, it really does.
I try to think back when I was in school. I really liked school. My grades were okay. I really looked forward to summer. Bill, I know you totally looked forward to summer.
Sure.
But when you have a deadline and you have to succeed, I have a way of doing it, although I think back to when I was that age, I didn't do it as well as I do it now. I mean, part of that's maturity, isn't it?
Of course, absolutely. You know, we get better at this with time. Our kids also live in a little bit of a different universe than we did. You know what I mean? Like, so The pressures that they feel academically, socially, and otherwise, and I probably harp on this a little too much, but it is absolutely true, are so far beyond what we went through when we were our kids' ages that we can't really relate. We can only learn from them. What's it like? What's it like in the age of social media? What's it like in the age where it's so much harder to get into these colleges, so you're pressed to do all these extracurricular things and study an extra hour or two a night beyond what I did? It's really hard to understand what our kids are going through unless we sit down and we listen to them.
All right. And you said to sit down and listen to them and talk to them calmly. How do you handle the calmly part?
It's so brutal to do. You've got to find this moment. Like, because I hold no parents accountable for being anxious. I get it. I felt it myself. You've got to find a moment where you feel calmer than normal. And to make it trickier, you've got to find a moment where your kid is also calmer than normal, where, you know, they regress a little bit, where they are up for talking to you about this stuff, and sit down. And that's when you want to ask them, you know, like, okay, so give me an idea of what life is like being you at your age.
Uh-huh.
And be prepared to be surprised. Be prepared that you might hear something you don't want to hear.
Oh,
I feel stupid. I don't think anybody likes me. I don't think any of my teachers like me. You might hear some of this stuff. I hear this all the time, every single day from kids. And I don't think we were feeling this way, you know, 30 years ago.
But here's the way this normally plays out, John. You already know this. Then the parent says, but you're not stupid. You're very smart and stuff. And then they say, well, you have to say that you're my mom or you're my dad.
Of course.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, it's very difficult, and this is to your point as well, Wendy, to try to talk your kid out of the way they feel. And it's futile, because they're going to, in a way, when you say, oh no, you're really smart and you're lovable and every, you know, the minute you go into that space, what your kid hears is, oh, you're really anxious about this too.
Yeah, right.
And I can't really come to you with this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you really have to be willing to hear them out and say, wow, what does that feel like?
Yeah.
And acknowledge the way, at least the way they feel. I don't think you have to join in and say, yes, you're not very bright.
Right.
You don't want
right.
to do that. Right. But you want to say, what does it feel like to feel that way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the makeup of a kid? I heard Patty Vasquez talking about her son who, when he starts going to a new school, will have to take a bus and a train and leave early and get to school. And that kid's going to do it. And there are a lot of kids that do that and go through the motions. And then there are kids that just like, school.
Right. All right. So you do have these two ends of the spectrum, right? And it looks like this type A kid, Patty's son, I work with a few kids like this who are driven. And it feels like, you know, they're not going to accept anything but an A, and they're going for AP classes, and they're going to sign up for extracurriculars. And on the other end, you have these kids who are on Instagram instead of doing homework or, you know, playing Fortnite, and you can't even get their attention. And, mm-hmm. and it feels like there's this gulf of difference between them. But all of those kids, in one way or another, are suffering some degree of anxiety. So that press to be perfect, there's some anxiety affiliated with that that you want to help your kid manage and bring back. You don't have to be perfect, but I really want you to do well. With your child who has checked out, in a way, kids opt out for reasons, for cause. It's really interesting to hear them talk about it, because they'll look at that type A kid and recognize, oh, I can't do that. I'm not going to play that game. That's too stressful. So I'm just going to opt out and I'm not going to do anything. And our ideal is somewhere in the middle, right? We want our kids to feel balanced in some way. You know, we sure. want them to be able to enjoy some of their time, and we want them to press and do their best.
Yeah.
And it's really, really tricky to walk that line these days.
Michael was my first kid. When he went to high school, I pushed all the time. It was like, did you do your homework? Did you do that? And his anxiety level went up as Jim and I both said that. And at some point, we're just like, you know what? He's in high school. He can handle himself. Honestly, the minute we stopped pushing him, his grades went up. He did better. It's that pressure that can ruin you.
And it's sometimes pressure coming from us, right? And we have all these ways of tracking where our kids are. You know, we have these portals we can look at online and see whether they turned in their math homework this afternoon,
right.
Which is a little extreme to me. I wish those didn't exist, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because the minute, you're right, Wendy, the minute our pressure comes down, our kids' pressure comes down, and they respond accordingly. It's just really, really hard to control our pressure and our anxiety, because we want the best for them. And we're afraid that if we don't clamp down hard and press, they're not going to get there.
It's not up to us at some point. It's up to them.
Yeah.
We have to take a break. Dr. John Duffy is here. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. White Sox baseball is coming your way at 11 o'clock this morning, so we are going to wrap up. Dr. John Duffy is here, clinical psychologist. You can reach him at drjohnduffy.com. And something that was in breaking news this morning, in Dixon High School, a shooting happened. A former student fired a gun at a police officer working at that high school in the gymnasium at about 8 a.m. this morning. Students were gathered there for graduation practice, and this happens. They reports say no life-threatening injuries for either of these people. Yeah. This is a scary thing. Are kids scared to go to school, or are we as parents more nervous to send them when things like this break?
By far, we as parents are more nervous to send them. So I think it's an important thing to talk to kids about. I think it's important that schools have plans. But in my experience, the vast majority of kids, unless a kid is very high on the anxiety scale, they do not worry about this. I mean, that somehow kids can run the numbers in their heads and recognize the likelihood of this happening to me at my high school is exceptionally low. So I think most of the fear about this sits with us, not with our kids.
All right. Talk about the psyche of the child, the kid involved in a story like this. I know every story is different, John, but what has to happen for a potential shooter to say, I'm going to make this more public. I'm going to go somewhere and do something awful.
So the research that we're seeing now suggests that there's a couple of elements that have to be that tend to be present when there is a school shooter, be they a current or former student. They are, to some extent, they feel disenfranchised. They feel left out. Almost always, virtually always, there's this degree of hopelessness. In other words, that child or young man, typically a guy, recognizes that he feels like his life is over. He feels like there is no future for him. There's a degree of hopelessness.
Yeah.
The part that we're having trouble figuring out is what drives somebody to go toward hurting somebody else as opposed to hurting themselves. Because an awful lot of kids who feel hopeless, they self-harm. And here we have somebody who has decided to harm somebody else. So typically that's somebody that is trying to make some kind of statement. And
but in the past, John, we've seen stories like this where the people they end up hurting are random people. Like you can almost in your head put the pieces together and go, they want to hurt the person who wronged them, but that's hardly ever the case.
Virtually never the case. I mean, right, exactly. And sometimes it's just kind of like this school, this place, this world has not done well by me. And so I'm going to make a statement by kind of randomly scatter in a literally scattershot way. Picture Las Vegas, you know, I will kind of, you know, just make sure I make my mark and ruin other lives while I take my own down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
As a parent, it's really tough to think about this on the anniversary of Lori Dan. I watched that report on WGN News last night on TV, and that was so rare that there was a school shooting, and it didn't happen again for many, many years, and now it's just so common.
It is growing in popularity, for lack of a better word. I remember how aberrant Columbine felt. You know, it felt like, wow, this kind of once-in-a-lifetime, very bizarre, awful thing. And then, you know, and it was years before we started hearing about Sandy Hook and other shootings.
Well,
and
John, they're marking the 30th anniversary of the Winnetka shootings this week, too.
Yeah. Right, right.
You know, where Lori Dan burst into an elementary school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, Steve. And so, you know, I think the
as we just mentioned.
The frequency has to do with what we were talking about a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
This idea of being overstressed. And sometimes when kids get overstressed, they cannot see beyond today or tomorrow.
Sure.
So all they can do is panic,
yeah.
you know, and then some kids who have had maybe some aberrant early childhood experiences end up doing something really awful that they can't undo. And if they could just see beyond tomorrow, next week, and recognize, oh, things in all likelihood get better from here, you know, or it might be interesting to see how my story plays out from here. Then I think we're in the clear in a lot of these situations. The hard part is identifying these kids in time. to be able to intervene.
That's a good point. Summer's coming. Let's try and keep the stress level down and have that dangling carrot of summer break coming our way.
Yeah, it's right there.
Thank you so much. He's Dr. John Duffy. We're going to take a quick break. You can reach him. Where's your website and Twitter and all that information?
Yeah, drjohnduffy.com. That's my website. That's my Twitter handle. That's Instagram.
Perfect. We will take a break. We have White Sox baseball coming your way at 11:35. The pregame with Andy Mazur coming up next here on 720. All right, Bill, in about a minute, we are going to throw it to Andy Mazur, who's going to do the pregame for the White Sox. Will they walk the plank with the Pirates today in Pittsburgh?
Oh, very nice, Wendy.
Thank you. I need a
out the
sports...
Buccaneer references. That was splendid.
I need a sports nickname or something. You know, everybody has a...
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, lefty
like
from...
Like the Swirsk.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah, something like that.
Did people really call Chuck
Swirsky
call
the
Swirsk?
Swirsk? Yeah, no time to say the whole name. Just a nickname, please.
Well, that's good to know. Tomorrow on this very program, we will have a full show for your listening enjoyment. We will have White Sox tickets to give away. We will have American English, the band who's coming in to play some Beatles music.
Great.
We will talk to Stacey Hervella from Proven Winners Plants. Any gardening questions you might have. And, of course, Dean Richards.
And then on Friday, Wendy, just a quick reminder. The Walk of Fame out in Pioneer Court, that starts at 10 o'clock. If you're anywhere near the area, please, by all means, come out. We've done these in the past. They're always very enjoyable, a lot of fun. So, 10 o'clock till, I think, 11:30?
Yes, something like that. Yeah. All right, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago White Sox baseball pregame with Andy Mazur.